ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brought to you by Zada Jewelers, KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Belvieu, Houston. You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
How about a little ELO? You got to love it. Or maybe not. Nah, ELO, Jeff Lynne, great band. Did you like them, Aaron, or did you know much about them?
I never listened to them a whole lot, but I knew about them as I was growing up.
Yeah. No, Jeff Lynne played with the Traveling Wilburys, too. Anyway, let's move this on. My next guest is, he's a great friend, first of all, but showed me Manchester and Manchester United like you could never have been shown. Went on a trip with him overseas. You know him as Tom Clare. He is the author who wrote The Men Who Were the Busby Babes, also wrote Manchester United, The Original Trinity, and also with Ian McCartney, he wrote The United Tour of Manchester. He grew up in Manchester. The Busby Babes were his heroes, and he joins us now. He's Tom Clare. Tom, how are you?
I'm good, Glenn. It's very, very nice to hear you and good to join you.
Always nice to talk with you, too. Now, you and I have talked about this next topic a lot. Dementia has struck the world of football. We've lost another great one in the legendary Nobby Styles, 66 World Cup winner, European Cup. The list of the names that we have lost now goes on and on. And you really opened my eyes to the fact that the PFA and the FA has really not done much for this, what is now becoming a bygone generation. And some of these, you know, great players are just dying in obscurity and nobody's really paying a whole lot of attention to them. Take us into some of this.
Yeah, well, you know, it all went back way back to around about 1998, when there was the first signs that dementia was becoming a problem in the game in UK. And the PFA actually did a study. They paid for a study to be held. There was 115 young players that they decided to monitor and have a look at. Now, nothing was heard of for over 10 years. And not until Jeff Astle, the former England inter centre forward, West Bromwich and England centre forward, died from dementia, did this all come to light again. And what happened, Jeff Astle's brain was given to the medical people, and they had a look at it, and they found that the findings of what they did was that his brain was akin to that of a boxer's, the guy who's been hit about the head so much. And it was decided at the end that the cause of his death was down to industrial injury, which is what his family were fighting for. Now, the PFA and the FA vehemently opposed this. They said there was no correlation with it whatsoever. And they dug their heels in. And the study that they'd done in 1998 was buried and could never be found. And they said it was completed, but they can't remember what the findings were. So this is where I got involved with it, because I knew that Nobby Styles was suffering from it. And I started to do some research. And when you looked at it, you know, from that 1966 World Cup winning team, Ray Wilson, Nobby Styles, Jack Charlton, Bobby Charlton, Roger Hunt, and Martin Peters have all succumbed to dementia. So I was digging more, and I was amazed when I found out that without even looking too hard, I came up with over 200 people, well-known players who died from dementia or were suffering from it. And I made a big song and dance about it, and because I was appalled that the PFA and the FA were doing absolutely nothing, and they were opposing anything, to do, with a further investigation and a look at, why this was happening. Since then, there have been so many players who've died from it and who are suffering from it. Tommy Smith, Billy McNeil, so many great players, and
Peter
they've
Bonetti.
Had no help. No help whatsoever from the PFA or the FA, and it's been left to the families to bear the brunt of this. And of course, the nursing side of it's expensive, and in a lot of ways, they've had to sell their descendants have had to sell their homes to pay for the care for their loved ones. And it was absolutely appalling to me, that the PFA. Many of the families appealed to the PFA for help, and they were just rebuffed. So it really is a bad situation, Glenn.
Tom Clare joining us, the noted author. I recommend that you read his books. You can find him online. All you got to do is Google Tom Clare and Manchester United, the men who were the Busby Babes. Tom, the other thing that, we have to remember, too, is... these guys didn't make the money that's being made now. So, some of these players and their families and their wives have, to your point, not really been helped out the way these legends have. Because after all, they have paved the way. These names are incredible. I mean, Nobby Styles is another one, and we just lost him. Tell us about Nobby.
Oh, Nobby. Well, I've known Nobby. Well, I did know Nobby from school days. He was just a little older than me, but our families, my grandfather and Nobby's father, were great, great friends and worked with each other closely at St. Patrick's Church in Colliest and also in local politics there. And I got to know Nobby as a young boy, and they were a staunch Manchester United family, and Nobby, I saw him play for St. Patrick's, and then he went on for Manchester Boys, Lancashire, and played for England Schoolboys. And there was only one club that he was ever going to join, and of course that was Manchester United, which he did in 1957. And he joined, that really great team, that great staff that was there then, the Busby Babes. But sadly, 6 months after he joined was the tragic Munich disaster, and of course, the upheaval in the club and everything. So a lot of the young players were pushed forward, and at 15 and 16, Nobby was already playing in the reserve team, and he went on to make his debut in 1960 against Bolton Wanderers at Burnham Park, and he became something of a fixture. But in those days, he was an inside forward. He's what we would say was an attacking midfielder today. And he was very good, but Jimmy Murphy saw something in him, there was a bit of a problem with him. He kept picking up bookings, today are yellow cards and everything. And Harry Gregg, who I visited last December, actually told me the story. He said, I kept watching him in training. He said, and his mistiming of tackles was terrible. He said, I got a hold of him, and he said, I asked him, I said, is your sight bothering you? And Nobby said, well, I've always had bad eyesight. So Harry Gregg went to see Matt Busby, and Busby got him off to see an optometrist, and of course that's where he was diagnosed with the bad eyesight, and where they countered it with the contact lenses and what have you, and that seemed to do the job. And there was in a few training matches where he played alongside Bill Foulkes at the dual centre back, and it worked, and Jimmy Murphy, said to Busby, this is the partnership that we wanted. And he went there and he played alongside Bill Foulkes for nearly 5 years, 5-6 years, And of course, he forced his way into the England team in 1965. He played in his first international, which I saw at Wembley when he played against Scotland in a 2-2 draw. And between then and 1969, he was hardly out of the side. And of course, he was a member of that wonderful World Cup winning team in 1966. But Nobby was a fierce competitor, but he was also a very bright player. He read the game well. He what a lot of people don't realise about Nobby, he was tenacious in the tackle, but he could also pass the ball as well, you know. And and he was a great addition and a good partner for the, you know, the granite type of centre half that Bill Foulkes was.
Tom, I only have 20 seconds with you, and you're going to have to answer this very, very quickly. Is Manchester United doing enough for these former legends?
No. Neither Manchester United, the Football League, the Premier League, the PFA, they've all got the money, Glenn, and if they all put £10 million into a foundation fund, the care homes could be built and maintained to look after these people.
We're going to leave it at that. Tom, you're the best. We thank you so much for coming on, and I'm going to be talking to you soon, buddy.
It's my pleasure, Glenn. Always a pleasure to be on with you.
All right. Speaking of legends, well, Tom Clare's a legend. Forever a Babe, the Men Who Were the Busby Babes, Manchester United, the Original Trinity, and the United Tour of Manchester, Tom, with Ian McCartney. You got to read these books if you really want to go into the history and feel it, because it jumps off the pages. And the memory and the detail is off the charts. That's Tom Clare. We're going to take a break here. Courtesy of John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. You can call them. But a little harder they come. Jimmy Cliff.
This is Ed Too Tall Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I'm Greg Berhalter. You're listening to Soccer Matters. Glenn Davis on ESPN 97.5.
Big day for Greg Berhalter. The roster was announced, the press conference, the U.S. ahead of games against Wales and Panama in Europe. And incredible, you know, just to look at that roster and just see how many players performing at big clubs and then others really trying to carve out a name and a reputation and a career on the books at big clubs that just haven't got there yet. Our next guest, though, is Jason Longshore. He does the radio for Atlanta United. Always a great guest to talk some Major League Soccer in Atlanta United. Jason, how are you?
Doing well, Glenn. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure to have you on. You and I, we always have great discussions on the game. So I want to just quickly go to, look, I get the Josef Martínez injury. We lost Tata. All these great moments. De Boer's gone. Stephen Glass is now, I believe, the interim coach. Where has Atlanta gone from this just ridiculous off-the-charts start to where are they right now?
It's been a wild year. I mean, with the Josef injury early on, that really changed the way this attack was going to be structured. And Frank De Boer struggled to find the answer to that. And I think that's what cost him in the MLS's back tournament ultimately. In Orlando, and Stephen Glass has come in, and he's had to deal with injuries. He's had to deal with Pitty Martinez's transfer, incorporating Jurgen Damm, incorporating Kubo Torres, trying to get some consistency with the group. And with this schedule, as everybody in MLS is dealing with right now, it's very difficult to build. So for an interim manager coming in, it's been hard for him to get the team, I think, where he wants consistently enough. It's only been here recently, and the results haven't been going their way up until this last one, but you're finally starting to see some chemistry building with Marcelino Moreno now on the team, with Jurgen Damm not 100%, but at least able to get you 60 to 70 minutes with Ezequiel Barco back into the mix. That has helped, but it's still, you know, fighting uphill to build some consistency right now.
So when we move forward with this, and we just saw, you know, and I had the grand privilege of having an opportunity to call a national broadcast in there. And, I mean, just to experience it, the walk into the stadium, everything, just off the charts when Tata Martino was the coach. Has there been healthy pressure? Has this fan base, with all the success that was generated so early and the bar set so high, has there been criticism? Is there healthy criticism coming from this fan base in Atlanta?
Yeah, definitely. There's been a lot, and maybe it's even swung the other way because it is new that you're not seeing, you know, a club that has had ups and downs over an extended period of time. There's, you know, maybe an overreaction at the beginning about how good things were, and maybe a little bit of an overreaction now because there's struggles for the first time. So it's part of the learning process, though. You know, a fan base builds over time as you go through these experiences and you look back at the highs and the lows. This is the first time that Atlanta United has really had lows. So I think people, you know, whether it's local media, whether it's the fan base, are all figuring out kind of what that's like and some of the reasons that can cause it in this league. And, you know, you've been around this league so long, you know how thin the margins are. Even for the big teams, you have a major injury, you have things that just don't quite click, and it can turn really fast. It can also turn back really fast with the right corresponding moves.
Yeah, and that is part of the beauty of the league. So the local press, like the Constitution Journal, I guess it's called, are there articles of criticism on player choices, on games? I mean, how deep does that sort of critique go? Because I'm just trying to get a gauge on that for my listeners, because we have absolutely none of that here in Houston, and I find that very unhealthy.
Yeah, there's a lot of it here, which is great. You have the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Doug Robertson, beat writer, covers all the games, travels when we could do those sorts of things. Pre-COVID, and you know, he's been covering this team from day one, and yes, he has been critical when it is warranted, and he has been questioning some of the player choices. He's been questioning some of the player performances, as have, you know, all the local podcasts, all the local blogs, and you know, Felipe Cardenas writes for The Athletic. He's based in Atlanta. You have Dirty South Soccer on the SB Nation network, one of the biggest sites in their MLS network. And it's been a lot of questioning this year. So definitely it's not a point where people are still in a honeymoon phase. People are wondering what's next now. Again, because I think this is the first time you really had those questions here in Atlanta so far since Atlanta United started.
So where is some of the critical thought being directed? Is it being directed at Carlos Bocanegra? Is it being directed at other areas of the organization? Where is it being directed?
At times there's a little bit of grasping for straws to find it. There has been some towards the front office for signings, which I expected, because this past offseason you saw Julian Gressel, who was a fan favorite, want a new contract, end up getting that, but with DC United. Darlington Nagbe wanted to be closer to family. He didn't want to stay in Atlanta. He didn't want to sign a new deal to stay around. Leandro Gonzalez Pires was transferred as well, and he had told the club, according to Carlos Bocanegra, that if there was an offer that allowed him to make more money, he would be interested, and that offer materialized in Tijuana. And because of those moves, you lose some fan favorites, some people that fans have associated with this club from the early days, and there's backlash when the results aren't there. Now, I think this has been a year that's been really difficult when you look at some of the players that have replaced that group. Mateo Sosachu coming in from Brazil in the midfield, Emerson Heineman coming in. Emerson Heineman tested positive for coronavirus in midseason. Sosachu's had injuries. He hasn't started 10 times yet for Atlanta United. Brooks Lennon has been a hit on the right side. Brooks Lennon has done really, really well. I think that was a smart move by the front office to get him, get a little better defensively on that right side. And in the back, Fernando Meza comes in from Liga MX, and he's had injuries. He was very good early in the season in CONCACAF and then got hurt right after the MLS's back tournament, and he's just found his way back into the team here lately. You've had Miles Robinson in and out of the team. You've had so many key figures. You haven't had a first-choice lineup play one time for Atlanta United this season. And the results show that.
So let me take you to Kubo Torres, because he was very indifferent down here. It seemed like he was a little bit more interested in the off-the-field lifestyle, which, you know, I would think if you're not, if you're in public and you know, you're having too much of a good time, it's probably going to be reported in Atlanta. It probably isn't going to be in Houston. But how has he been there? Do you have faith in him as a center forward? Tell us a little bit about Kubo Torres and how he's played in Atlanta.
Kubo hasn't been able to lock down the job up top, and that's been one of the big disappointments. You know, you go back and you look at what's happened here since the Joseph Martinez injury. You know, and this was something that, you know, you look back at Frank DeBoer's time, it's the biggest question mark for me, because the games after Joseph's injury, you saw Adam John start up top, you saw a false nine situation at the Azteca in CONCACAF Champions League with Pity Martinez up top, you saw Manuel Castro, who's a winger, playing up top in the MLS's back tournament, then back to John, and it just kept bouncing around. Then Kubo Torres comes in, you start to work him into the group. He's not fit when he gets here. He's building, you know, up his fitness, his availability.
Then so let me just, injury. Jason, can I stop you there? Because
yeah,
I'm curious, you know, who, I guess, Eric Kubo Torres, who we know as talent. I mean, there's no question he's a talented soccer player. But his pathway to getting to Atlanta, there's nothing prior that would have said to me, this guy's ready to come to Atlanta and really help us. He's got a goal and an assist in 12 games. You said he hasn't become a starter. He's started 4 games. Was this just sort of blind faith, hoping that a talented soccer player might in this environment just turn it around?
Possibly. He was available on a free, and he was signed after the Joseph Martinez move to the injury list. So that opened up the spot, which MLS roster rules, you know, you're limited in what you can do with those injury replacement signings. Kubo Torres is available. You bring him in. The biggest thing that makes it hard to judge Kubo is once he started to get fit, he got hurt, and he had a knee injury, which looked like was going to keep him out for the rest of the season. Now, he's come back. He's gotten one goal, but it just hasn't happened for him. Adam John has kind of solidified himself up top here lately with John Gallagher getting some minutes off the bench. Kubo's been, you know, he's been a good teammate on the field. I mean, he's trying to build with the team. He's connected well with Jürgen Damm, which has been nice to see. But he's had chances, and he hasn't found the back of the net very often.
How good has Jürgen Damm been?
Dom's starting to come into form now, which has been really nice to see. He was in the same situation as Kubo, which was one of the major frustrations for Steven Glass, is you bring these two guys in, and once they start to get to the point that they can start matches for you, they don't have to come off the bench, the fitness is good enough to start, they both get hurt at the same time. For Kubo, it's a knee. For Dom, it's the hamstring. Now, Dom comes back a little bit quicker. He's playing really well right now, but he's not 100%. He can go about 60 minutes. And you can see the difference. Early on in matches, you see the speed. You see the ability to break down outside backs, put in crosses. He's got 4 assists so far for Atlanta this season. But you see him start to wane in the second half. And he just doesn't have the full fitness right now. And if he did, you know, and looking at next year with his team, with Dom, with Barco, with Marcelino Moreno, who's been a great addition from Lanús in Argentina.
Good soccer players.
And Joseph back. Yeah, Marcelino Moreno's been a great fit. That's a good attack when you get Joseph Martinez back in this team.
He's at Longshue on Twitter. He's Jason Longshore, does a lot of great stuff with Atlanta United on the radio. Mention your radio station real quick, Jason, because I got an interesting question for you next.
Yeah, we're on 92.9 The Game in Atlanta, and you can listen to our match broadcast on the radio.com app as well.
Okay, 30 seconds is all I got for this, and I'm going to throw this one at you real quick. Town halls with Carlos Bocanegra, transparency, talking to the fan base. How good is Atlanta United with that?
They've been good before this year. Now, this year's been a struggle, I think, as much to coronavirus as the results. I think that will come back as we go into next year. A lot of people are waiting to see what the managerial hire is going to be. That's the big question that everybody has on their minds right now. And there really haven't been a whole lot of rumors that the local media has turned up just yet. So waiting to see what happens there. We'll hope to hear soon.
All right, Jason, thank you as always. That's Jason Longshore coming from Atlanta, of course, does great work with Atlanta United. Jason, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
He's the best. You get a lot of Atlanta United there. It's interesting because of where they were and where they are now, and they're trying to rebuild things and just factoring in all these things. Yeah, you know, why wouldn't Atlanta United take Eric Torres on a free? unless you're really watching what's been going on prior. It's worth a shot, right? All right, we'll take a break here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Coming up next, well, we're going to round it out in big style. Brian Sciarretta, we're going to break down the U.S. national team roster. On the shyness
that is coming. ESPN 97.5.
Hello, people. This is Alexi Lawless, and you are listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN.
All right, final segment tonight of Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Great friend of the show. Really, really enjoy his work from America Soccer Now. He is Brian Sciarretta. He joins us from New Jersey. Brian, how are you?
Doing great, Glenn. Thanks, as always, for having me on, and the pleasure is all mine.
Well, this is a perfect day to have Brian Sciarretta on. By the way, how's everything in the Garden State up there?
It's gotten a lot colder, man. Oh, man. It was rainy earlier in the week, but now it's just cold. Winter is here.
But we're not getting some of that nice fall weather yet, huh?
Well, we had it. I think it's just it's already made like the transition. It's great foliage, though, this year.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we got a little cooler weather here, so that's why my seasons are all off. I'm remembering now you're getting into the winter and we're into the fall. But let's talk about the big news today. Greg Berhalter, the U.S., they announced the roster that's going to play against Wales on November 12th, Panama on November 16th. We put some details about this out on the show, but this is an incredibly intriguing roster, just simply from, and I'm not trying to blow some of these guys up before they deserve to be blown up or need to be blown up, but just to see where some of these young talents are positioned to me is pretty remarkable, Brian.
Yeah, it is an exciting time. I think, it's never been rare for Americans to be at big clubs at the youth levels. You know, some of these guys are now poking their head up into the first team, which is great. I mean, some of them are much further along than others. I mean, I generally call them, you have the core five. You know, you have McKenny, Pulisic, Reyna, Dest, and McKinney, I think. I didn't repeat myself. I think I got all five. And then after that, there tends to be a pretty big drop-off, in terms of guys who are, at these big clubs, but where are they in relation to their playing time? I think they're all on the roster. I think for now, we'll see how, Adams and Pulisic progress throughout the week and whether or not a change will have to be made there. And I think it is exciting to see some of these things, to see some of these players and where they're at. Whether they justify further call-ups after this, it's going to come down to how they do in this camp and how they do, moving forward with their clubs, because there's a lot of players there. I was counting earlier. I mean, we're approaching double digits of the 24 that have played fewer than 10 professional first-team games over the last 2 years, two seasons or season and a half. That's not a lot. So, I'm cautiously optimistic, but there's a lot of these players, have a lot more, have a long, very long way to go.
All right. 21 years of age, plus 300 days is the average age of this team. Okay. So based on the way this roster is made up, how much of this has provided opportunity to young guys because of COVID, and then how much of this is really about assessment for Greg Berhalter and getting a finger on some of these younger players that are in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, I think the COVID restrictions have prevent MLS players, some key MLS players from coming in and playing, and that's too bad because there's a lot of outstanding young players in MLS that you would think would be on a roster like this. I mean, we see Daryl DK, Bobisi, there's just the Io Akinola. I mean,
maybe Eric Williamson.
Eric Williamson's been tremendous. And so has, and obviously you want to look at goalkeepers too, because not one of these goalkeepers on this roster today is a starter for his club. And I mean, long gone are the days when you had Friedel, Howard, Keller, and Hahnemann all playing at high levels together in Europe. So, so a lot of this is COVID related in terms of getting a blended roster, but in terms of the direction to take with, and also without COVID, you would also have the U23 and U20 teams playing. And that would be also allowing to have multiple teams going at one time too. But yeah, definitely they want to take a look at young players and let them know that they're on the roster. So that's all very good. And these are low stakes friendlies too. I mean, the Wales will probably won't have all of its best players, and Panama won't be a full strength team either. So they'll get a chance to play games that they should win too, with such a young and inexperienced roster.
Talking to Brian Chiaretta of American Soccer Now, and appreciate this getting you on the show tonight. Three goalkeepers picked, seven defenders, six midfielders, eight forwards. A couple of guys I want to talk to you about, because I think you're going to know a little bit more about them than most because of the work you do following people. I want to go first to a midfielder from Internacional in Brazil, Johnny Cardoso. I've had an opportunity to watch him on TV a little bit. Tell us a little bit about him.
You know, he was from the Garden State, Denville, New Jersey. He was born here. He still has family and friends up here. Moved back to Brazil when he was young. Now he's playing for Internacional. Not every game. I mean, he had some injury concerns here and there, and he's not an everyday starter for them, but he's getting enough minutes for, you know, a player of his age, 18, 19 years old, born in 2001. It's one of the biggest non-European teams in the world. I mean, that's a huge club to be part of, and he's done well. I know Berhalter scouted him and brought him into the US U23 team last year, where he made his American debut, and Jason Christ raved about him. So he's got the U20s possibly, and maybe the next two U23 teams to play for as well. So that there is a benefit towards bringing in some of these players of that age range at this age. But yeah, he's a defensive midfielder, and one of the big areas of concern I have for this team, for the U.S. team moving forward, is backup for Tyler Adams at the number six defensive midfield position. There's not a lot of options, particularly guys who can cover ground and hit longer passes there. And Tyler's had some injury problems as well. So, you know, I think it's good to look at guys like him and Owen Odesoe, the kid from Wolves who's on this roster as well, some guys in MLS. I think that, you know, that area, that position really needs to be explored in depth, because they need options there.
Brian Chiaretta joining us from American Soccer Now. Okay, so Owen Odesoe, so we have a Wolves group here in Houston, Wolverhampton, and one of the guys in that group is a name, Paul LePage, and Paul has told me to keep an eye on Owen Odesoe. Is that how you pronounce it? Nigerian?
Yes, Odesoe, yes.
Odesoe. And, you know, he's been raving about him. I've never seen him play, but we're hearing tremendous things about him as a central midfield player.
Yeah, and look, I've heard tremendous things. He's played for the U.S. U18 team three different times a couple years ago. And when I was talking to some of the young prospects and coaching staff about, you know, people around that team, they were raving about him. They think he's just unbelievable. The one thing, though, is that he can also play central defense. His position's not really quite settled between the defensive midfield and central defense, so that's one of these things that'll have to get sorted out in his career. You want him to be a little consistent with where he plays, not just be like a jack of all trades. You really want him to be a master at one, and then maybe have some second positions he can play. But so we'll see where he eventually settles in. But I mean, he's just a phenomenally gifted athlete, and has got a lot of good things going for him.
All right, Sergiño Dest at Barcelona now. He's been getting some regular playing time. This roster is littered with a couple of veterans that might be able to lead here, with Tim Ream, John Brooks, players like that who have been in before. Take me into another player that has really been talked about quite a lot here, because I think he's made a level of commitment to the U.S. at least for this camp, not full-time yet, but that's the Valencia player, Yunus. Talk to me a little bit about him.
Yeah, Yunus Massua he was born in New York, I have never spoken with him, and it always helps. And I usually speak with a lot of these dual nationals at an early age. I have not spoken with him, so it's tough to know like his commitment or attachment to the United States. I read an interview once where he said, "I was only born in the U.S. because my mom went there on a holiday." I mean, doesn't sound like he's too attached to the U.S., but he also moved from U.S. to Italy, to Italy, to England. You know, he was a star in the Arsenal Academy, but instead made a bolt for Valencia, has already made his first team debut and scored, in La Liga. And that's a big stage for Valencia in La Liga. And He's playing as an outside midfielder, but eventually the club and Berhalter, I believe, see him playing centrally, box to box, but a guy who can cover a ton of ground. I mean, he's so athletic and he's got some skill, and he's so young too as well. So, they got themselves a real athlete on their hands, and we'll see where his international future is beyond after this camp. I mean, Berhalter was quite clear today in the press conference that they hope it's with the U.S. his U.S. future, but that remains to be seen. So, but look, they got their foot in the door with them. They're talking. They have a chance to make a strong and good first impression. I think that's really all you can ask for. Job well done with him.
Valencia currently 13 out of the 20 teams in the Liga. But okay, so where is the point where we have to be careful about overblowing some of these players right now and finding that balance between being excited as American soccer fans, but also making sure that we have the tendency to blow people up very, very quickly here at very, very young ages when they're still in their developmental stage. So where is the fine line there in balance with this roster to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And I think, like I said earlier in the show, there's been a lot of club players at big clubs, Americans at big clubs before. And for whatever reason, they just don't materialize. And, you can talk a lot about the players who go over there into these clubs and just don't make it. And I've seen even players who even then get on the first team and play a couple of games and then next thing you know, they're gone. They just don't stick around. But we're still at a lot of players here on this team that they're just not regulars yet. And maybe they will be, maybe they won't be. So it's always, you have to be very cautious in how you blow these guys up. Don't say Uli Lanez is, don't write him in ink on the 23-man roster for the 2022 World Cup or even World Cup qualifiers. I mean, we're dealing with a guy who's only come off the bench for a few late minutes at Heerenveen while he's on loan from Wolfsburg. And even Tim Weah, who's not making the match day roster right now at Lille. So these are players that I think a lot of people are familiar with, but you also have to see where the proof is in the pudding. I mentioned those core five players. That's different. There's genuine incitement when a guy's, an everyday starter or first one off the bench for a Champions League team. I mean, there's a huge gap between there and then, Chris Richards has a lot of promise. Tab Ramos raved about him with the USU 20 team. But where are the games going to be on a regular basis for him? We don't know. So until players really prove that they're, where the minutes are going to be for them and that they're going to be consistent, the gap between being around the first team and being on the first team and getting minutes is huge. So you have to kind of respect that gap when you talk about the hype on some of these players.
Yeah, talk about that hype a little bit further when it comes to media in this country. Are we too quick to anoint people? How do you think the media has handled, let's say, a Gio Reyna and a Christian Pulisic?
I mean, Gio Reyna and Christian Pulisic just have answered all the questions at a very early age. When you're 17 years old and you're starting in, the number 10 position, you're the creative offensive engine for a Borussia Dortmund. I mean, you can't control, hype around that. I mean, that puts him up there as one of the best 2002-born players in the world at this point. That's an amazing accomplishment for someone that age. And then, the hype is justified there. And same thing with Pulisic. I mean, he was from 17 years old, he was starting in the Champions League. I mean, those are real tangible accomplishments. I think when it gets out of control, in my younger days, I probably was more guilty of this, than I care to admit, but it's just by signing and being with teams and being affiliated with teams, you got to have to pump the brakes there. You can talk about them. You certainly want to have players on the radar, but you don't want to just start anointing them. And you have to understand that there's a lot of, players at these big teams that aren't quite the level of elite prospects. They're organizational soldiers, as a friend of mine likes to use that I like. I like that term. Yeah, so
that's a good one.
Yeah, you have to just kind of understand the roles and read between the tea lines. And if you do write about them, keep it open-ended. Respect that gap of where they have to – they're maybe in a nice position, but – where is that gap? I mean, I could talk a lot about players who just who were at that level and just never made it, so you just have to kind of understand these things and kind of sound like a wet blanket when you do talk about them, but that's probably the most accurate thing to do.
Well, listen, this is a roster that's really intriguing. It has a long range from guys that have been in the international game, the Brookses, the Reams, the ones that are established like Pulisic and Gio Reyna now. And then it goes down to guys that maybe, Yunus Musa at Valencia and others that we don't know as much about, Johnny Cardoso. So I think it's really, really intriguing. It's pretty outstanding and exciting. I don't think there's anything wrong with getting excited. By the way, Reggie Cannon in there, who played for Boa Vista yesterday, who defeated Benfica, got a goal from Albert Elise, too, the former Dynamo. So exciting. I think there has never been a time in U.S. Soccer history where you've had a lineup and a roster that's had players from Barcelona, Fulham, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, Wolverhampton, Juventus. It is pretty incredible. Don't you think it's a bit of a statement?
Yeah, I mean, it is a statement that I think a lot of these guys are in around the first team. There's no one that's completely buried at any one of these clubs, which is saying something amazing. I think it's certainly fair to be excited about this roster. Let's see what the kids can do, because they're playing against winnable opponents here where they can probably show their stuff. But I think that there is a long way to go for these guys to be regulars with the national team once the entire selection becomes available at their disposal. And these guys could all get bumped by other players quickly. A lot of them can be. But, I mean, for this time, just enjoy the ride. I think it's going to be fun, and we'll see where it takes us. Heading into 2021.
Put this in perspective. It is incredible competition for these players to get where they are. And it is pretty remarkable when you really think about it. He's Brian Ciaretta, American Soccer Now. Brian, thank you so much for coming on. We always love having you on the show. We'll do it again real soon. And maybe we'll get you back on after these two friendlies.
I can't wait, Glenn, anytime you need.
All right, he's Brian Ciaretta. Big thank you for Brian to come on the show tonight. We're going to wrap it up tonight here for Aaron Raybould, for Victor Ariza, and all you tuning in tonight, the podcast as well at podcastarena.com and on iTunes. On behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis. Until next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock Central Time, this has been Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Thanks for tuning in tonight.
ESPN 97.5.